Hello and welcome to another edition of the SGR Coffee Break. We are now fully patched. We're running at 2.0. This can be the best year for this podcast yet. Our inventories are fixed. You can now get quests. We're more MMORPG. Oh, wait, sorry. You're not Blake. So I guess that really you could give a shit about us running at patch level 2.0.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Destiny 2.0 released yesterday. Yes, everybody got to sit there and bitch about their internet connections, complain about the PlayStation servers. Xbox people complained about their Xboxes locking up during the patch. It was an 18 gigger that we all had to pull down yesterday for Destiny, and it basically was the entire Taken King content that is coming out next week. So they've done things like fixed up the interfaces a little bit. Your inventory is a lot better. There was a whole bunch of new stuff, some quest turn-ins. They added in new patrol stuff. Some of the stuff we can actually access because they're letting us have at it. And some of it we don't get to actually play with until next week, which is kind of sucky because there are things on our interface that we can see that we can't even do. Yeah. It was much hype. It was Destiny 2.0, where there's just a ton of hype about it. A lot of us are really excited because it's bringing a lot more MMORPG elements into the game now. So you got, you know, classic quest trackers. And
so they've embraced the fact that it is an MMO?
Yes. They've finally embraced that. And, you know, the changes yesterday, once you got the patch in place, it was really nice. I don't think people realize that they were really getting the entire Taken King content. So that's why it was 18 gigs. And now we're just waiting till, I think it's like midnight Pacific Standard Time is what we're waiting for. And that's when we can actually unlock it. So, yeah. But it was funny because, you know, Xbox people are like, it stopped at 52%. So people had to stop their whole download thing. They had to turn their Xboxes off, turn them back on. The other fun thing is that there's PlayStation has some exclusive stuff. So there is some specific weapons and strikes and all that stuff that were exclusive to the for Sony. But after that first year, they get rolled into the Xbox. The thing that sucks is that most of those weapons all got massive nerfs. So the stuff that everybody really wanted, they got yesterday, but it's all nerfed. So the stuff that people are like, I really want this, it's not as cool. Bungie, what the fuck are you doing? On top of that with the North bot, which it makes me sad. But we're not here to talk Destiny, because that's like Blake and I. We are here because summer is pretty much winding to a close. I have like one more convention that I'm going to. It's more like a Relaxicon, is what they call it. But this summer, we both went to quite a few gaming conventions, gaming type conventions.
Mm-hmm.
I know you did. You've done E3. Didn't you do a?
I did. Well,
you did a San Diego Comic Con.
Last year, I did. I did PAX South earlier this year. I did E3 and I did MomoCon, which is a anime sci-fi gaming convention, and which is where I got my photo with Keith David. Was at MomoCon, because there was E3 and then San Diego Comic Con, and I think that's all I did because I did not go to QuakeCon. I decided I didn't want to deal with all that. I was too tired.
And I've done Gen Con. I'm doing Relaxicon. I feel like there's one more somewhere in there, but I forget. Those ones, Gen Con is obviously the big one for me. But it's not video games, but it is. Well, I guess it is kind of video games that are starting to embrace that. They have a whole hall set up for doing things like they had a Heroes of the Storm tournament, they did League of Legends tournaments, they had fighting game tournaments. So yeah, so we've both, we're even throughout the past few years, I've done a couple D&D conventions. I know that you've done QuakeCon.
I have done QuakeCon in the past. I did Dallas Comic Con, which is more of a comic book convention. than anything else. I mean, I've done MomoCon a few times. I used to do Anime Weekend Atlanta, which I think is this coming weekend. No, it's in a few weekends because I'm not going. And I just found out that Chris the Bat is going to be there. I'm like, well, son of a bitch. I know I got to, like, you know, drink with you at San Diego Comic Con, and you actually live in Dallas. But I got to go to, like, you know, San Diego and Atlanta to actually see you in person.
Oh, life, you're so funny. So,
but I'm not going to be able to go because of money, mostly, and Sean going out of town, the other thing, you know, little things in life. Just little things. But we're talking about gaming conventions because one of our readers for a topic, like, you know, wanted us to talk about what we like in gaming conventions and what, which I'm assuming that they're saying that basically, like, when we go to gaming conventions, what do we look for? What do we prefer? What do we like? What do we dislike? What do we wish that they would all do? Or, and even, like, what do we like about some of the culture there? I guess I will kick it off with something I don't like. And that is just what San Diego Comic-Con does every year. And that is their whole line situation. Because San Diego Comic-Con, there's an obscene number of people that go to San Diego Comic-Con. And I don't know how they can limit it down, because it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because it's more of a pop culture con than anything else. So people want to go see the movie stars and TV stars more than they want to go for the comic books and the video game stuff. So the big problem is that they have, you know, they have panels all day, all over the place, but they don't let people, but they don't clear out the room in between panels. So what people do is that, like, for Hall H is the worst. They want to see a panel in the evening. Well, to guarantee that they'll be able to get in there, they'll just camp in a panel room all day. And that is also part of the reason why there's that funk smell going on, because people who don't shower, who've been camping out, especially for Hall H, I don't want to know how bad Hall H smells with people that I've seen camping outside overnight to get into the first panel at 11 a.m. and camp there all day for the Star Wars panel at 7 o'clock at night. That's probably my biggest beef. And their whole thing is, well, we don't know what to do about the lines. And it's like, you just open a line for a certain time, you know, because I've been to other conventions that are pretty big. No, they're not San Diego Comic-Con big, but they're very, you know, like with autographs and everything, they're very big on that line opens at this time. It closes at this time. So yes, you might have a problem with people milling about, but I don't see how that's any worse than people camping in a room all day and preventing other people from seeing a panel at 3 that they really want to go see.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've tackled the line thing before, but like Gen Con, they do the you do tickets, so they cater to the people that actually signed up for those tickets, and then they have somebody sitting at the door and they collect. You know, you have some of the events you have to pay for. So obviously, if you've paid to be in that event, you get priority over the people that just have, because you can buy a generic ticket, which is like $2, and you just use generic tickets to fill in that price. So what they do is they take all the people that actually registered for that event, and, you know, if you've paid for it and all that, they'll take those first. So those people get to go in first, and then they start letting the general populace in with their generic tickets. So, and that seems to work out pretty well, because you still get a little bit, you get some line camping, but it's nothing like what you said, where people are camping out overnight to get there. You know, they'll show up, you know, half an hour early, so that way they can get a good seat, or an hour, depending on, you know, if it's an author that they want to see, or, you know, if there's you know, like Will Wheaton, if he's doing something, or Felicia Day is there and she's doing something, they'll line up, you know, an hour or two beforehand, but you're not going to see people camped out. So, I like that. I understand that it adds a lot more overhead, because then you have to start, you know, you got to have somebody camped out at the door to collect the tickets, and you got to make sure that they have the right ticket and all that other jazz. So it kind of, it will slow down people getting in and out, but at the same point, it allows the people that want to be at a specific event and, you know, or a panel, and they've actually went through the effort of picking up that panel, you know, picking up the ticket for that panel, it pretty much ensures mm-hmm. that they get to get in there and see what they want to see.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and maybe that would help San Diego Comic-Con is if they made people, you know, pay for tickets, or I don't know, maybe the outrage would be high because to get into San Diego Comic-Con is already pretty pricey as it is. But I think a lot of these people, this is their only vacation that they take. So making them, you know, sit, pick out panels and not camp somewhere all day, I don't think is that bad of a thing. Yeah. Especially if it means that somebody else gets to go see that one thing that, that they want to go see. But to things that I like, what I look forward to the most with gaming conventions, this is going to shock everybody, is voice acting panels. That's usually what I spend most of my time is that I find out that there's certain voice actors at panels. Those are the panels that I want to go to. I just get a kick out of watching these people talk with their normal voices and then break into their character voices and talking about how they came up with the idea of the voice for that character and then interacting with other people. I'm not so big on when the audience asks questions because you get too many, oh my God, people. And, you know, people ask, I don't know, kind of silly questions or people who try to audition for the actor. I watched that when I went to a panel with Steve Bloom. And people were like, I can imitate you. And they get up there and do that. And he's like, oh, that's nice. You know, the thing about Steve Bloom is like, yes, he's a talented voice actor, but he naturally has that deep voice. You think of like Spike Spiegel or Tom from Toonami. That's what Steve Bloom sounds like naturally. He might add a little more edge or maybe make it a little sound a little higher, but that's just him. Anyway, there's that video from Emerald City Comic Con that I watch like at least once a year, where it has like this group of like 10 voice actors who are on stage who are doing like a desk reading of the opening scene in Star Wars. And after every few lines, they all switch which voices that they do. And it's such a kick to watch it. And just to watch them, you know, just kind of talk about their craft and see like how happy they are doing it. So those are the ones that I look forward to the most. There's usually a lot of workshops at conventions, like writing workshops and art workshops and things like that. And I'm not really into the workshop scene, but that's not meant for me.
Yeah, I've done a couple of those. They do at like Gen Con, it's how to build your own terrain. So if you're into the mini, the war minis or the war machine stuff or tabletop battle stuff, Warhammer, that kind of thing. They do workshops on how to build your own terrain, and it's pretty insightful because you never realize how much work, how much stuff you can get out of styrofoam and a hot knife.
Wow.
So, yeah. And they, like the workshops that they had this year, there was one that I thought about going, and it was social media, you know, how to get your brand out there in social media and how to interact on social media, because let's face it, we've seen some pretty bad things happen on social media, and you've seen some really good things happen on social media. So, you know, being able to handle Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, if that's your jam, you know, being able to handle that in a professional kind of manner, it can do a lot for your business, for if you're writing a book, you know, getting mm-hmm. that out there. If you're making your own little game, let's face it, indies are the hotness right now. So, you know, making a game, how to get that out there, get people to see it. So, I mean, that was pretty cool too. So,
yeah, I'm trying to think like, because normally like what, because lately the conventions I'm going to have been work related, so I haven't had much free time to go do whatever I want to do. Try to think of the last conventions I've gone to where I didn't go for work. Because I went to SakuraCon several years ago, and that was not a good experience for me. And it wasn't because SakuraCon was bad; it was because the people that invited me to come to Seattle and go within the SakuraCon, they were the only two people I knew at this convention. And then they found out the day before the convention that that because they were volunteering to sign up for the auction, they thought they were going to have like, you know, a few hours to work the sign up for the auction. Mm-hmm. And then they could go do the con, and then everyone bailed on them and they had to work the auction every day. So I was basically, so they were like, you have, like, just go play by yourself. I'm like,
hey. Yeah, that ain't gonna happen.
No, I mean, so I kind of sat with them a while and they kept saying, Carrie, go have fun. I'm like, you guys don't understand. Like, that's not my thing to go out there by myself. So I would go to the dealer room for a little bit. I'd go to a couple of panels and then I would go and sit in the Rock Band 2 tournament, which I have to say that if I never hear Aqualung ever again. Oh my gosh. So, and is this because the convention, it was more an anime convention, and that was when I was on my way out of anime, so there wasn't a whole lot there that I was that interested in. And I can only do the dealer room for so long. You know, I go up and down, and then you're like, okay, so now you're totally broken, your arms are full of this plastic crap. What are you going to do now? And they didn't have that many panels I was interested in. It was not a good experience for me. And I mean, if I was probably really hardcore in anime, maybe I would have been just fine. I would have found more panels to go to. But I'm just the type of person that yes, I'm an introvert, but when I'm there with a sea of people I don't know, I need my buddy to cling to.
Yeah. I get like that at several things. It's like, don't leave me here alone. Don't leave me here alone, or I'm just going to sit here in the middle of a sea of people freaked out because...
So like when I go to the Atlanta conventions, that's with one of my best friends, Erin, and she and I have a lot of the same tastes and stuff. So we will usually line up our panels. And if there's a panel that, you know, I want to see, or she doesn't want to see, the one she just wants to see more, like we have no problem splitting up, but then we always meet like right after, like I am here, I'm in the dealer room here. We don't like to split up from the dealer room. And that was part of the reason why I had such a hard time at San Diego Comic-Con on Thursday, when I kind of had my little meltdown over text message to my friend Erin. Was because I was alone most of the day and I didn't have a whole lot of appointments, and I just kind of felt, you know, it's amazing when you're there with thousands of people how lonely you will feel. And you know, they're like, well, go to this party. Well, I don't go to parties by myself. That's draining. I just want to hang out with like one or two friends and just talk and have a good time. And my roommate, he was off doing stuff, and you know, it was one of those things. And so, like, she's going to try to go with me to Comic-Con next year, because I am going to go. But, well, that's the plan anyway. That's my plan is to go. Well, you know, life has a interesting way of sometimes altering plans. You know, like my husband, you know, going overseas for a few months. There's always those kinds of life-altering plans. But, I'm just not one of those I have several friends, like they love PAX East. I've been to PAX East once. I don't ever plan on going back. It is too much. It's awesome in the fact that there's like tons of gamers there. It's a gaming convention. It's probably, you know, it's like E3 but for the public. Mm-hmm. And yes, I had my appointments and everything. It's just that it was just swarmed full of people. And the people, gamers are a rude bunch. I don't know how to explain it. Like, they have no problems pushing you out of the way, stomping on your foot. It didn't help I was 5 months pregnant and not in a good mood. You know, and there was a lot of games there that, yes, it was kind of cool to see, but I didn't really want to wait 2 hours for it because I wasn't able to get an appointment because I wasn't important enough to have an appointment. And, and people are like, oh, well, just go find friends. Go make new friends. Like, yeah, that's kind of not what I do. So, like, every night you were invited to a party, and I was like, I just want to go back to the room and just stare at the wall and have the over-simulation just kind of stop. And then a lot of people who go there, and they have a great, great time. And it also didn't help that it's in Boston. I love Boston. I don't love Boston in March. It's fucking cold. And the fact that it was snowing in late March, like, this is bullshit. Like, I had just left, you know, 80 degree weather, and then I get to 20 degree weather and like, nope, this is crap. This is absolute crap.
Poor Carrie. Poor Carrie.
I know. I guess I just work better when it's like the smaller convention. I think that's why I like E3 so much, because it is, compared to PAX East and everything else, it is smaller. And I mean by smaller, I just mean by the number of attendees that are there, not the size of the convention. And I know so many more people. Like, I did E3 last two years by myself, but I never once felt like I was by myself, because one, I was booked to multiple appointments, but two, everywhere I turned, I ran into somebody that I knew. You don't have that at these big conventions like a PAX East or something like that, because there's so many more people than just the press or just your friends. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm snobby that way, but I just kind of like it when I just like the smaller things where I know more people. And it's not because, oh, that means I get more special treatment, because that's not entirely true. Because San Diego Comic-Con, I got more special treatment at San Diego Comic-Con than I did at E3. I think it's because there's so few press there. They just roll out the carpet for anybody. Because, I mean, they roll it out for me, they roll it out for anybody. But there's also so many more people, to the point that you feel so isolated, and you want to attach on to those developers who do roll out the carpet for you. It's like, oh my gosh, somebody I kind of know.
Oh.
That's my thing about conventions. And I guess it would help if I didn't do so many in one year, because I do get burned out.
Yeah, it's a drain on money. It's hard doing conventions, because it's the hotel room, the parking, the driving, the food.
It's not even just the money. It's just the constant being out and being interactive, and just the constant, you know, stimulation to your eyes. And it's, you know, as I remember at E3, probably, I don't remember which year it was either 2011 or 2012. I just remember because I was just constantly moving all day, and I went into this one, you know, because you're constantly seeing all this video game stuff, so it's constant eye stimulation. And I sat in this one room, they had a presentation, they turned off the lights, and my eyes, seriously, I went like that, just because it was something like, because I was able just to kind of sit and not think for a minute, and the brain was like, good night, you need to, we can't take this anymore.
Well, I don't know. I mean, so I've done, Gen Con is by far the biggest one I've done. I've done a couple D&D ones, which end up being really small, and those are very specifically focused on, like, when the D&D stuff, it's, you know, that you're getting up about 10 o'clock, you're going to get in your first D&D game, you're going to play D&D until about 6 o'clock that evening, and then more than likely you're going to go back to the hotel room and play. Well, you're going to the pub down the street to get quite a few beers, and then you're going back to the room to do something like play Magic or, you know, Catan or something like that. So
right,
you know, Gen Con has become an annual pilgrimage for me. It's something that I've been doing so long now. I've missed one year. It irritates me that I've missed that one year, and it's something that, in the first longest I can foresee myself doing it, I'll be going to Gen Con every year. You know, the only thing there's really only two things that I don't really jive on Gen Con, and it's because it keeps growing. And the convention hall, it used to be, they took Lucas Oil Stadium or whatever it is. It used to be attached to the convention center, and then they took that out and they made their own stadium. So now the convention, it goes into the old football field. So they've rebuilt all that, made it into the convention space. But Gen Con has been growing every year, and usually by about 5,000 to 7,000 people. That's how the attendee numbers keep going up. And it's by Saturday, you cannot walk around at all. You're like this, trying to, if you go into the dealer hall, it's like this, and you get really good at just, you know, forcing your way through, because at some point, you know, like you said, gamers are rude, but there's also a point where you have all this massive flow of people, and eventually, if you stop to try to be nice, you're never going to go. So you got to go. So that's one of the big things. The other one is the obvious. You know, I wish that they conventions would just, you know, have a little staging area where you're supposed to go through and they like de-louse you because gamer funk is a real problem.
It's a real thing.
Especially on Saturday. And, you know, we talked about money. There are people who, my biggest problems that I have with something like PAX and the problem with Gen Con is that PAX, those tickets sell out within like 30 seconds. So unless you're just willing to, you know, sit there at that when they're like, hey, you can get in. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a con for everybody, but it's a con for those people that either took the day off of work, so that way they could sit there on the internet and just hopefully get a ticket. And then when you don't get it, you see all this uproar about not getting tickets. But Gen Con, they do, it's kind of the same thing with hotels because, you know, as this con constantly grows, hotel rooms are becoming harder and harder to get. So there's this whole rush of, you know, that the hotel rooms are going on sale at noon and they're going to be on sale on this day. And I had a friend last year tell me that he tried to get a hotel room and it was within a minute that the hotels were all gone. And it was just like, I don't even know. So I think a lot of people are now just getting their hotel rooms early because, you know, the dates.
Oh, have I told you how San Diego Comic-Con does hotels? You can't book it on your own. You have to go through San Diego Comic-Con's hotel service. Mm. And what it is they let you know when it's open. And basically everyone's in there clicking refresh and trying to get in there. And what you do is that you put in your top 8 hotel requests and then send it out to the hotel gods. And then you wait till about a couple months before the mention and they let you know which hotel you're in.
Wow. That's terrible. So there is a lot of things that I do like about gaming conventions though. My biggest one for me is that I always go to conventions with friends and I'm always going like Convergence, Convergence is a strange kind of try to explain, but you know, that one I'm going, we're going with friends, we're going to drink, we're going to eat good food, we're going to play games, we're going to watch movies, we're going to geek out on sci-fi and fantasy stuff. And you know, when I go to Gen Con, I always go with a different collection of friends that goes. It's still out of the same pool. It's just, you know, some years some people can go, some years other people can go. It is an expensive thing to do. And you know, when I do Gen Con, when I did the D&D stuff, it was great because we would play games, we would joke, like the adolescent humor in 40-year-old guys is just, it's terrible. But you know, we joke. This Gen Con we played games from, I get down to the vendor hall at about 10 and then they just roam around and try new games and, you know, preview stuff and see what's in the works and all that. And then, you know, you go have your beers, you listen to some live music because that's what we do. We go down to the blues bar and listen to the music there and then come back to the hotel room and we play games, you know, because we've all throughout the day have picked up this game here or that game there because we found a good deal on it. You know, we just play games until this year was bad. We played it until 4 in the morning and then got up at 8 and proceeded mm-hmm. on with the day. So there's that. There's as a con in general, the thing that I like is that you have a bunch of people all coming together that are there to basically celebrate, you know, their love of whatever. So there are times that, you know, I want to play like, my wife and I got into the World of Warcraft trading card game when it was still a thing. So we have a bunch of those and, you know, the game isn't supported anymore. They don't make the cards, but I go to Gen Con and I can find people to play it with. Granted, I'm not hunting them down, but you know, you'll be sitting there on the floor looking at your cards and stuff. And somebody be like, oh, I have some of those. Want to play a game? And you're like, okay, yeah, let's do that. So there's just that overall, like we're all here to participate and enjoy this, you know, this thing. Yeah. And it's just a way to connect with new people. And I'm an introvert, so I'm not going to hunt people down. But if people are come up and, you know, you're looking at something and then somebody else starts up a conversation with me, I'm like, oh, okay, let's talk about this. Let's enjoy it. I will say that the cosplay stuff, it's not something that I go to take pictures of, and it's not something I myself dress up to do. But man, the costumes that some people put together are just insanely good. I've seen like a big daddy and a little sister costume that was just, it was on point. Yet my favorites are the ones that, you know, I'm not a Wolverine fan myself, but when the guys that, you know, obviously have, you know, they fit the bill, right? So they're built. Not trying to be body shaming here. Let's not get into this. This is why I hate our world today, is that now I have to be conscious of what I say. But, you know, they're thin. They look exactly like Hugh Jackman and all that. They're walking around. They look exactly like Wolverine. This year there was a guy walking around as Bane from the last Dark Knight movie. And man, he was a big, like, you know, he's obviously crushes watermelons when he wakes up in the morning, just like, but that dude was huge. And I was just like, damn, you look exact, like you fit that Bane bill so well. And obviously, I mean, you got the easy ones, which is there's so many Deadpools now, so many Deadpools and so many stormtroopers and stormtrooper cross-ups and all that. But it's a lot of fun to just walk around and see some really solid costumes that people have obviously taken their time and effort and put it in. And I know, like, Gen Con, I know Dragon Con, those are the two big ones that I've been to that all have like a cosplay parade. So, you know, you can
most anime conventions have a cosplay parade. MomoCon does, and Anime Week in Atlanta does, Acon in Dallas does, Anime Fest in Dallas does. I believe Dallas Comic Con does. SakuraCon did, and I went and watched that because people I was staying with, they were in the parade.
Oh, wow.
Because they had made these amazing costumes. And PAX, you see cosplayers at PAX, but not so much, because I think that's more of a comic and anime thing than it is as much video games. I mean, there are some, but not as much. And of course, at E3, there's not at all, because it is a trade show. And San Diego Comic Con, of course, they're everywhere. But, and it's varying things. It's anime, it's comics, it's video games, it's movies.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I can say too about something like Gen Con or Dragon Con, well, yeah, I haven't really heard it from Dragon Con either, even though Dragon Con isn't purely video games. My problem with PAX is that there always seems to be some sort of hoopla that comes around, and there's always this thing leading up to PAX about cosplayers and all that. It's just like, come on. And it's something that I've never really seen at Gen Con, and I haven't really heard any hoopla or anything about people kind of overstepping their bounds, especially when it comes to cosplayers. Let's face it, that's where most of this happens, is in the cosplay area. You know, guys get a little too grabby, get a little ass happy, decide to get in a little bit more than they need to. So,
well, I have my own theory about that, why those complaints happen more at PAX than anywhere else, but I will keep that to myself and not on the public airwaves.
So, you know, the hardest thing about, like you said, when you go to a convention, it's like, go. And there's that whole, like, I don't know, for me, it's about a week before I'm getting ready to go to the convention that the hype starts getting real and I start getting excited. Then I'm finally in my truck. I'm finally driving to the, you know, to wherever it is that I'm going, because I try not to fly. Because let's face it, when you go to a convention, you need to pack an extra suitcase in your suitcase, because you're always going to come home with a lot more shit than you left with. But man, it's that once you're there, the excitement, like, there's that vibe in the convention center or your hotels, you know, especially for when you go to like Dragon Con or Gen Con. I don't know how it is at Comic Cons, But, you know, you're walking through the hotel lobby and there are people just sitting there playing games and they're having fun. And, you know, you're making the normal vanilla people look at you like, what the fuck is going on? So there's that awesome energy, which then ultimately leads into the con drop at the very end when you're like, oh, I got to load all this shit up and go home. Damn. So.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for me, the biggest thing is really just being there with friends, reconnecting with people that you haven't, because we live so far away. And thanks to social media, let's face it, and emails and all that, it's easy for us all to just sit there and talk to each other. But being able to finally meet up, reconnect, go have a drink or go have dinner, whatever your thing is, go to a party. You know, and do that with friends that you know, you only get to see once a year. For a lot of us, this is the only time that we get to see each other.
And that's why I like E3, because I only get to see, you know, my coworkers from my sister sites only once a year, and, you know, other friends, you know, I only get to see them once a year. And that's why I like going to the Atlanta conventions, because that's usually about the only time I get to see my friend Aaron. I haven't really gone to Dallas conventions in such a long time, because I don't know. It's just, for me, it's more fun to kind of get away from the kids, as awful as that, I'm sure that sounds, but sometimes it's just more fun to go somewhere else.
Yep.
And because she works for Cartoon Network, she gets free passes into these conventions. So it's not, you know, so it's, I don't know. It's just, so I always love going out there to see her for stuff. And that was the only reason why I was going to go to San Diego Comic-Con, is because that was like one of our big trips that the two of us were going to take together, was to go to San Diego Comic-Con, and then she wasn't able to go. And at least my friend Drew was going to be able to go. So another sad story is that, you know, Drew lives in DFW area, and apparently I have to go to San Diego to see him. the way that things are, but that's the big reason why I still go, and if I can't go with Finn, that's a big reason why I didn't end up going to QuakeCon, is because even though I knew a lot of people were going to be in town for it, there was nobody I specifically set up to meet. So as far as I knew, it was going to be the convention. I was going to go by myself and sit by myself and maybe try to find people. And probably because I was so close to after Comic-Con, I just wasn't feeling it. But that's what I need. I need to see friends there.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't go. And
I think that's going to be true of, I mean, any con. I mean, I'm pretty sure that if you asked anybody about what their favorite thing about going to gaming any convention really is going to be, mm-hmm. seeing friends that you don't get to see that often and actually just having fun with them. And, you know, even at, I've been to trade shows for work and stuff like that. And even those, you know, it's, you're meeting up with people that you've worked with, finally getting to see them that one time a year. You're wrapped up in all the excitement of what's going on. I've worked in the university scene for quite a while, and regardless of how boring it may seem, there's still hype when you go to a trade show.
Or
something like that. You know, you're still there. You're like, oh my god, did you see this new thing that they're putting in, this next version of their software? Oh, it's going to change how our work's. And you get, just again, you're still there with friends, right? And you're just like, oh my god, and you start talking about all the great things that you're going to do with whatever it is that you're, you know, mm-hmm. there for with work. So it's that level of excitement that you get at the convention, along with being there with friends. And it's that part that just is like, this is why I got to keep going. This is why I'm going to go. This is what makes me want to do this over and over. This is why I save up throughout the entire year. So that way when I come home and I look at that bill and go, wow, I just dropped $4,000 at fucking Gen Con. Wow, I just spent, you know, $2,500 at Dragon Con or whatever. And you just go, it was worth it.
Yeah.
I will live off of hot dogs and stale bread for the next 2 months just to make up for it, but it was worth it. So yeah, so there we go. I think we got that covered
yes,
I think we hammered that one right into the ground. So you got both what we liked and a lot of what we didn't like. So there you go. So Carrie, What is on your list of what you've been playing?
Let's see. Because I got still, you know, Halo Master Chief Collection. Drew and I are still going through that. Tonight we start Halo 2. Woo! So excited. Just because I need to make popcorn for every session because he's never played. So. And he's read the books, and I just can't wait for his mind to be blown. I'm going to hear, oh, shit, about so many things. So I got that going. I did play some more Diablo 3 yesterday because I only had an hour worth of playtime, so I decided to play some Diablo 3. Still trying to get, you know, still gold farming. I'm still doing it. I am going to get this trophy this year, even if that's what I do the entirety of Extra Life, damn it. That'd be the most boring Extra Life ever, but that's what I'm doing. And I've been playing Mad Max. How this kind of happened was my boss asked me, he's like, hey, are you going to play Mad Max? I was like, well, I'd like to. You know, it was a lot of fun at E3. I just don't really have the time right now. And it's just another open world game, and maybe I'll get it at the bargain bin, blah, blah, blah. Then he gets on private message. He's like, okay, see, here's the deal. I need you to go buy Mad Max today. And I'm like, okay. And he said, because I can't review it and Metal Gear Solid 5 at the same time. There's just too much Metal Gear Solid. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go buy Mad Max. And so I bought it on Friday, and then slacked all weekend, and so finally got to play it. And it's a lot of fun. There is a lot of driving, but which I was super nervous about when I realized how much driving there really is in the game, but the controls are not very complicated and it doesn't take very long to get a groove. Yes, I still flip the car and still crash him a lot. But the good thing is that his good buddy Chum Bucket's in there, and all you can do is get out of the car and he sits there and fixes it. So I don't really have to worry about blowing up my car. Which is a very honest worry whenever I'm behind the wheel. But like I've gotten pretty good about how to drive, how to handle the acceleration and things like that. And you know, harpooning people out of cars just never gets old.
So I hear.
Yeah, I mean, just like anytime like I get attacked on my car and he's like, shoot the gas tank. I'm like, no way, I'm harpooning out the driver because that just stops the car instantly.
Oh, Gary. Carrie, you're yeah. So violent.
So, and the other problem is that it is open world, but it's open world in that it's akin to like Far Cry 4 or Infamous, that there's all these little mini things to do, like little collectible hunts, or because there's the influence of the evil warlord. So you go through these territories and you try to lower his influence, which sounds, I don't know, an awful lot like Infamous. So you go do things like, you know, tear things down and go blow up their camps. And when you blow up their camps, then you get allies will take over the camp and they'll start sending you resources. So I'm just kind of having fun, you know, blowing up things. But other thing I will say is that the environment is very... They nailed how the environment feels, because the whole time I'm playing, I'm constantly drinking water because I'm so thirsty.
Oh, that's awesome.
And like the weather changes on a whim, like everything will be fine. Then all of a sudden, you know, sandstorm will come in, and which you can use that to your advantage, or it might hurt you depending on what's going on. I am wondering now, because I know the Mad Max movies are like the early 80s, if this was the Waterworld inspiration, just because of, you know, the crazy gangs and the psycho people. It just reminds me a lot of Waterworld, because I've never seen Mad Max, but I know Mad Max came way before Waterworld did. But like I haven't read the negative reviews because I don't want to read any reviews until I'm done. But you know, in the meantime, no, is it anything like innovative or brand new? Or not exactly, but you know, sometimes it's just fun to go. I mean, it's Avalanche Studios, the guys who do Just Cause 3. They basically just took a world that was fun to play around in, and they're letting you just go blow shit up. That's kind of what they do.
Yeah, I've been watching streams because when the game came out, so I'd been following the game for a little while after I saw some of the trailers. It's like, oh, this actually looks like a decent you know, movie to game iteration. Really interested in it. Then the reviews came out, and those were so hit or miss. Eventually, you just break down, and you're like, yeah, everybody hates the game. But then I'm watching, like, I'm watching on Twitch, and I'm watching actual people play it, and they're having a hell of a good time. And I was like, so critics probably didn't really nail this one down, but from what I'm seeing, it looks like a ton of fun. Yes, it does look very repetitive, and it looks bleak, but that's what the world is. I mean, it's post, you know, post-war. We're out of water. What do you think? It's going to be lush and green everywhere? No, it's going to be brown and rusty because there ain't shit around. So, but, you know, I've been watching, there's two people that I've been watching the last, I don't know, week or so, and just watching them play through it. I haven't caught a whole lot of the storyline. I've just been watching, you know, like 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, half an hour here. One day it was 2 hours. I did get quite a bit of story on that one, but, you know, and just watching them like, oh, this is so much fun. Oh, there's something, it's that whole squirrel thing, you know, you're like, you'd said you're driving along and all suddenly there's something to do over here and you're like, oh, I'm gonna go over here now, go do this. So looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. Like I'm looking over the Metacritic scores now, and I do think, like, so far with my little time, some of the nines are probably too high, but the 50s and 40s are kind of harsh.
Yeah.
But see, but then again, it was, please, it was Jimquisition gave it a 40. Well, he hates everything.
Yeah, well, whatever with him.
Yeah, so, but, and Destructoid gave it a 70, which is actually kind of high for him, high for Destructoid, because they do hate everything. But, you know, I think the ones that are in the 70s, like the upper 70s and low 80s so far are, at least that lines up with my feeling. But, you know, yes, it's the same thing over and over again. So was Infamous, and I fucking loved Infamous. I, you know, 100%ed every single time I played it, the Paragon and the Paragon, the good and the evil. You know, I 100%ed all of that. And yes, doing the spray paint, is that repetitive? Yes. Clearing out the drug dealers? Yes. Doesn't mean that it wasn't fun to just go zap a bunch of bitches. And I think it's the same thing here. Like, yes, you're going to get to a new area. Okay, I got these totems to pull over. I got these emblems to knock down. I have these camps to blow up. Yes, it's going to be repetitive, but still fun. I mean, Far Cry was repetitive. I still had a blast doing Far Cry 4.
Yeah. So, would you say it's a $60 game or a $40 game?
I can't say yet because I haven't played enough.
Okay. So this also proves,
I think you would love it.
That's what I've had like three people now playing it tell me that they think I would very much enjoy it, just because they know me. They know how I like the cars and all that and the open worldness of it. So yeah, this is also one of the reasons why I think reviewers need to start taking their shit online to Twitch. Because what I'm seeing here is a complete disconnect between what a reviewer is saying and what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing from people that are actually playing the game. You know, I know Mike Dineen has sent me a couple messages telling me how he's very much enjoyed it. He basically already said, like, the story is eh, but the world itself is a lot of fun and making your car is awesome. So, you know, from the people that are actually playing it, I'm hearing a lot of good things about it. They're not, you know, nobody's lying to me. Nobody's like, oh, this is the best shit since sliced bread. But, you know, they're like, you would probably enjoy this because of what you like to play. So, yeah.
Right, right. So, like, and, you know, honestly, when reviews are mixed, that says to me that this is just one of those games that isn't for everyone. And that's fine. It'll tickle some people's fancies, but not others.
Yep.
You know, I usually enjoy the games that have, like, more mixed reviews than the ones that are like, oh my god, this is the best shit ever. Because I usually end up not really agreeing.
Because it isn't always the best shit ever.
Right, and I guess I kind of think that a lot of reviewers, they get in a hive mindset of what a good game is. And just because, okay, maybe a certain, okay, let's take movies. So I like a lot of movies that don't do well critically because they make me laugh, or they're so silly, or they're just fun. And I think games are the exact same way.
Right. So Mad Max, good so far.
Yes, good so far.
Good so far.
So is Destiny good so far?
Well, patch 2.0, like we discussed earlier, has finally come out. This is the one that we've all been waiting for. This is the one that's actually, you know, this is, hang on. Waiting for the garbage truck to go by because I think the mic's going to pick that up. You know, this is the one that a lot of us are saying, you know, we're finally leaving Destiny Year 1 or Destiny Beta, and we're actually getting to Destiny proper now. And from what I've seen so far, you know, I played around with it for probably 6 or 7 hours yesterday. And I definitely like the changes that they've put in there. There's a lot of little nice things. The being able to turn in my quest now, or my bounty, or my, yeah, the bounties, without ever having to go back into the reef or back to the tower, just taking it off. I love that. I like their whole new UI layout. Kind of, I guess it's not really UI, but you know, they changed this that way. You actually have a quest tab now. Then you have your gear. When you go to the bank, it's all broken down. I like having the kiosks. That way, I don't have to carry around all this decorative stuff. So like your shaders, which is what changes your armor, different colors. Your emblem, which is a little icon that shows your name and your level and all that. You can change all that. Well, you used to have to carry all that around or keep it in your bank. Well, now you can just get rid of it. You can delete it all because you just go to a kiosk because you've already acquired it, pick the one that you want at that point, put it on, and then away you go. You never have to fill up your inventory with that garbage again. Or your vault space, that all just goes away. Same thing with your ships and your sparrows, all that stuff. You can basically, once you acquire it, you can either keep it on your person or you can dismantle it and go back to the kiosk later at some point and get it again. So love doing that. I really like their quest breakdowns now. They actually brought the RPG, the MMO-ness into this game now. You can go back and redo all the old story quests and actually have like quest tracking on it. And I'm saving that until after next week, so that way I can actually start getting, you know, experience for my up to, so I can get to level 40. But I like that. I like how they finally, you actually have a proper level now. So, you know, I'm level 34 on two of my characters and level 20 something on my warlock. But and now your light is just a number that's generated from all the gear you have. And now you have, you know, it'll tell you. You can't do this because your light needs to be, you know, X amount. And there's a lot of stuff that we can't do yet because none of us have the high enough light level to get to that. But I like how they finally broken that apart. It's not like you got the level 20 and then if you wanted to be level 34, you had to acquire gear in order to make that happen. Now it's, you are level 34, but if you want to do this particular thing, we recommend that all of your gear add up to this specific value because that's the only way that you're probably going to be able to hit anything or survive. So I'm definitely digging that. I'm really looking forward to next week when all the Taken King stuff unlocks. That way I can actually start doing things like earning my legendary marks, getting rid of all they're simplifying, you know, materials. So now instead of having plate steel plating and sapphire wire, it's just armor materials. That's it. You just freaking get armor materials. The thing that sucks is that I got stuff that I need to upgrade, but I don't have enough armor materials, but I can't trade in all my old stuff, like my plate steel plating and all that. I can't turn that in yet because that shit isn't unlocked. So I think next week will be a big thing for Destiny. The Taken King is definitely looking like they are finally doing something proper with this, and they're trying to right some of the wrongs. Is it going to bring a bunch of people in? I think you're going to see a Destiny surge like you do every MMO, like World of Warcraft always gets more people back in as soon as the new expansion comes out. So yes, we're going to see a surge of people coming in. There are going to be Twitch streamers that are bringing it in, like Lyric. Lyric has said he's going to be playing Destiny again. He'll probably play for about 2 weeks and then he'll be done. He'll move on to another game. That's fine. You know, so we're going to have a bunch of people coming in, checking it out. May keep some people, may not. If you carry, you're lucky because, you know, you never had to listen to Dinklebot, so you can, you'll never know if you'll love them or hate them. But now we have Northbot, or we now have Northbot, which is a very, if you've been playing Destiny for a while, it's a really hard thing to get used to at this point, and it sounds so freaking generic. Like Guilty Spark 343, that's pretty much what we've equated it to at this point. So you know what, I think that whole ghost thing, that they're never going to get that right. It's never going to be a thing that people are ever going to be happy with. So just turn up some music or something every time that they decide to talk about. But hey, I got sand in my boots, so let's carry on.
You got sand. Oh, God, sand, that's so bad.
Yeah, oh, so that's so that bad. Was an actual line that my brothers and I heard when we landed on Mars, and the dude comes to Northbot, comes on and starts talking, and his last thing is, "We're gonna get sand in our boots." Yes, Northbot, we're gonna get sand in our boots because it is Mars. Anyway, Bladeboard Mega Man Legacy Collection. Still, this is by far the best $15 I've bought. I'm actually just like, now I'm just playing games at willy nilly because I'm just like, okay, let's play it. And the other one I decided to really invest some time into was Forza Horizon 2. And, you know, I don't know that I'm going to be... I really want to play Forza 6. I don't think that it's going to be something that I want to pick up right away, because I realize that I much prefer the crew in the Forza Horizon 2 formula of just choosing a point on your map and driving around, and you have all this, you know... road trip kind of stuff going on. But man, it was a very busy weekend. So on Monday, I just told my wife, I was like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to play games all day, and I'm not going to do anything because the last 5 days have just been stupid. She's like, okay. So sat down and started playing that at, I don't know, like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I played it until like 12 o'clock that night. And just had so much fun because there's so much stuff to do in there, and you don't even have to race. There's all kinds of like little bounty boards that you can go try to run over and get XP for it, and you get some barn finds. So like, I have a nice VW camper bus now. That's pretty cool. And I just found a Ford or something like that, a barn find. So I found that last night. And then the racing itself is pretty good. So really, I'm really digging this, and it makes me hopeful that after Forza 6 comes out, we'll see a Forza Horizon 3. So I hope they carry on with this formula of, here's a track, here's an open world, here's a track racer, here's an open world. Although I did watch the Forza 6 video. I have the demo downloaded on my Xbox One. I just need to fire it up. But man, like, they have two videos. One is like they go through this whole collage of why do we race, and it's pretty good. I think it's the intro scene for Forza 6 actually. And then they have another one where they brought in all these old school racing games like Pole Position and F1 and all that, and they made a video out of it. It's so good. It's so good. Especially if you played a lot of the racing games from like the all the way down to the Atari days. So they brought in some of those old sound effects, they brought in some of the visuals, they brought in a lot of, like, you'll notice like Rad Racer. There's a specific part in that video where you'll be like, I remember that from Rad Racer. So they're a little tribute to, you know,
yeah,
racing games. That was pretty awesome. I thought that was pretty good. I thought it was well done. So
it's actually in their commercials too. I was like, that's really so cool how they've kept that.
Yeah. So Forza 6 looks pretty solid, especially because I'm a big Ford GT kind of fan. I've loved that car since, you know, it won the races way back in the day, and I've always wanted a Ford GT40. So them using that new 2017 Ford GT, just tugging at the old heartstrings. But enough of that, Carrie. Drive us home.
Oh, okay. Yay. Well, you didn't talk at Mega Man Legacy Collection, or did you?
I did. I'm just playing it willy-nilly now. Because, you know, okay. My inner 10-year-old is just loving it, so.
So install breaking controllers, your thumbs, everything else?
No, actually, the old muscle memory is starting to come back. And it does take a little bit of play, especially if you've been having... played a Nintendo hard game in a while.
Yeah.
So, and it's actually helping me out because I had a friend. Oh, I play Titan Souls. A friend of mine gifted me Titan Souls, which is like the, I don't know, 16-bit looking thing where you're a little dude and all you do is you just go fight monsters. And you only have a bow and arrow, and you only have one arrow. So you shoot the arrow, and then you got to call the arrow back. And you only have one hit point. So anytime the monster hits you, you die. So it is a brutally difficult game. Like, and some of the puzzles that they threw in there for the bosses are pretty ingenious. The one I'm working on right now is like there's you have to hit the heart, the brain, and all that. Well, the one that I'm working on now is there's a brain entrapped in a cube of ice, and you got to get the monster to hit certain blocks, and it starts a fire in the center, and then you got to try to get the monster, you know, cross that fire and start melting the ice. That way, you can get to the brain. So it's a ton of fun. But Mega Man Legacy has helped me out with that because, you know, Nintendo hard. So there you go. Now you can take us home.
All right. Okay. Now I can take us home. Okay. Well, as you can see, we do actually consider topic suggestions. Like, we've done Blake's, and now we've done another reader's. And I would pronounce your name, sir, but I have no idea how to pronounce your name. I'm really sorry. You're one of our hardcore fans, too, so I'm really sorry about that. But I don't even want to try to pronounce your name. So if you have something that you'd like us to talk about, you can leave us a comment on this post. You can email me at strategyguidereviews@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can follow all of us on Twitter. Chris is at Starvin. I am at Crunchy Chocobo, and the site is at Strategy Reviews. And coming up in a couple of weeks, since Chris will not be here, as he will be in Colorado, I believe, for a fall color tour, we're going to have a special guest, Emily Reese, formerly of Top Score Podcast, who has left Minnesota NPR and Top Score Podcast to form her own enterprise in discussing video game soundtracks and composers and all that. So prepare for a nice little nerd out session with me and Miss Reese. And of course, we ask that you keep on reading SGR. We got Brad is working on his Metal Gear Solid strategy guide, and I'm going to be posting today my review of the very first issue of the brand new Mirror's Edge comic, because that releases today. 6 months preparation for the game.
Oh, snap.
That's right. All right. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
And before we go, remember on this day, 9-9 of 09, the Dreamcast was released upon us. We wish you a very happy birthday. We miss you so much, Dreamcast. And with that, we're out. Peace. I got to find the window, though. Hold on. Keep staring at my finger. Peace.